Welcome to Lead Follow, a podcast for pastors and leaders, hosted by MCUSA Executive Director Glenn Guyton. Join Glenn as he talks to folks across the denomination to help equip today's leaders who are leading while following Jesus.
Hello, I'm Glenn Guyton, and during this season of Lead Follow, we'll be exploring ways to engage with youth and young adults from Gen Alpha to Gen Z. Today, I am pleased to welcome Rolando Sosa, who will be discussing how to foster resilience and mental well-being. How you doing today, Rolando?
We're doing fine, Glenn. How about you?
I'm doing great. Well, I want to tell the people just a little bit about your background. Sure. Rolando is a child and adolescent therapist at Oaklawn Psychiatric Center in Goshen, Indiana, where he has served for 11 years, and he is also a pastor of Piedra Viva Mennonite Church in Elkhart. He also has more than 20 years of experience in addiction counseling and served for 5 years as a therapist with Indiana Juvenile Justice Task Force. He holds a master's degree in social work from Andrews University and a Master of Divinity degree in pastoral care and counseling from Anabaptist Mennonite Biblical Seminary. All right, Rolando, we're going to start off with a question. With all of that experience that you have, I think you'll do a good job of answering this. But if you were to give your 13-year-old self one piece of advice, what would it be?
There are so many things that we can say to a 13-year-old, but one of them will be you need to know that you are not alone. You know, there are some people that love you and that care for you regardless of where you are in your life. So you are not alone.
You are not alone. I think that's good advice. And when you're that age, as a teenager, so many things are going on that I think it can be pretty lonely. But you know, what I wonder, Rolando, with your experience and where we are now, what are some of the newer challenges that you think are maybe facing youth and young adults in today's society?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. What I see in my practice here at the hospital is bullying is one of them, you mm-hmm. know, which may lead to self-harm and also self-medication.
Okay.
You know, the youth does not want to share sometimes what's going on in school. He doesn't want mom to know. He doesn't want dad to know what's going on, because there is the in youth culture, there is mm-hmm. the understanding that you don't snitch.
You don't snitch. Yep. Because they say snitches get stitches.
Snitches.
Yes. Yes.
So the youth, usually when he or she is being bullied, he stays quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Not only that, but also I think it's stigmatized, you know, that you don't talk about what's going on in your life. If you go and ask for help, mm-hmm. then you're weak.
Right.
You know, and that is the understanding in this culture, in that culture, youth culture. You know, so it is important for youth to come out and to talk and to report what's going on at school.
Well, you know, I find that fascinating, though, because I think about when I was a kid, you know, many years ago, what 40 some years ago when I was that age. But it seems like now kids communicate more than we did. Like, they have social media, they have email, they have these cell phones. I mean, why do you think they feel so alone now in 2024 when me growing up as a kid in the 70s, I didn't feel that way. What's different about today's youth?
Well, I wonder if it has something to do with the communication between parent and child.
Okay.
You know, sometimes they feel, or youth feel, that they are not on the same page with their dads or mm-hmm. with their moms. You know, so that lack of communication, I believe, contributes to the sense of isolation. Not only that, but also the fact that maybe they are the youth. I mean, they are involved in certain practice that they don't want their parents to know, that may contribute to the lack of communication. Hence, the importance for the father, the mother to be able to connect with that youth, you know, understand youth culture, you know, and how can I talk to this young person? It is extremely, extremely important for the father, for the mother to be able to connect with their teen.
What, do you feel like parents nowadays are less connected or maybe not equipped as much as, I don't know, you know, I think about my parents and I don't know, my dad wasn't that engaged. My mother was pretty engaged. I just wonder, do you think that just with parents nowadays, are they less equipped to work with their young people?
I see that all the time here in my office. Sometimes mom and the child comes to my office for the initial therapy session. And right from the beginning, I need to set boundaries.
Oh, wow.
One of the boundaries is that no cell phone usage while we are in therapy. Because believe it or not, the father, the mother is complaining that the youth is constantly on his or her phone. But then the parent is using his or her phone in my office.
Wow. During the therapy session, they're on the phone.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And then respectfully, I say, could you please put your phone down?
Yeah.
You know, and then they feel kind of awkward, you know. So I believe that the electronics, you know, that has impacted the level of communication that we have in our families now.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
If you go to a breakfast, for breakfast, you know, and you look around, you will see how many couples, you know, instead of interacting with each other, they're doing what?
They're scrolling on their phone. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I don't think that that is a youth problem per se. I think that is just a cultural problem that we're having.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. That's something to think about. The culture and the shifting culture and how we're on these devices can really lead to, I know, isolation. I know it can lead to this envy, you know, FOMO, fear of missing out. And, you know, we constantly compare ourselves to other people, to unrealistic expectations. I'm sure all of those things are really at the heart of maybe what's isolating these kids nowadays.
Yeah.
And so, so as we think about then the broader community, you're a therapist, but also you're a pastor also. So one of my questions is how can churches help in this? How can they create supportive environments that maybe promote mental well-being and this sense of belonging amongst youth and young adults?
I think that we as pastors, we have tremendous power in the right sense of the word. I think that we can influence people and we can influence our parishioners by, number one, stop the stigmatization of mental health problems.
Okay.
You know, it is important that we de-stigmatize that the problem. You know, our brain is one more organ in the human body. And just like my liver, my pancreas, my heart, kidneys, they get sick. You know, my brain gets sick sometimes, you know, because it's just another organ in the human biology. So we need to understand that just any of those organs get sick, my brain gets sick sometimes.
Okay.
So it is normal for us human beings to get depressed and to get anxious. Now, I hear some pastors that they say that if you cannot shake off your depression, your anxiety, then there is a spiritual problem.
Yes, yes.
You know, which makes the victim get victimized again.
Yes.
You know, so we as pastors, I believe, with all due respect to my colleagues that may hear this, we need to be careful what we say to our parishioner. Mental health is a new normal experience of the human humans in general.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is just normal, like getting diabetes.
Okay. Okay.
Or perhaps even more prevalent.
Yes. Yes. No, I think that's good. I appreciate that, Rolando. I think that's, I think, yeah, sometimes in the church, maybe we've done more harm in some of these areas.
Unfortunately.
Maybe out of ignorance. I know we spiritualize things, but I don't think many, well, some pastors may say, hey, if you have diabetes, you just need to pray about it. But for the most part, they'll say, hey, no, go take your medicine, go see the doctor, get the appropriate treatment. And so as we think about mental health, now you are a trained mental health professional, and not all pastors are. You may have to help someone find the doctor or the mental health professional that they need.
And you know what? We as a denomination, Glenn, we can do something about that. You know, we can teach our pastors in our conferences, in get-together, you know, and we need to normalize this. How many youth have committed suicide because they feel that we don't understand them? How many youth, they, you know, start self-harming behaviors or self-medicating with substances?
Yeah.
Addictive substances, because they don't feel that we understand them, you know.
Yeah.
So I think it's important for us, the church, to normalize mental health problems and to give them help. You know, they need help available.
This is important what you're saying about destigmatizing mental health in the church. Talking about it like it is a more normal thing. And, you know, I don't know, fully know your background, but I know there are, you know, sometimes in different cultures, we basically say, hey, if you have a mental health problem, you have a demon or something, right? It needs to be cast out. And like you said, it really re-traumatizes the person again, because now you have a place like the church where it's supposed to be a place of safety and love. Mm-hmm. Now they're saying, hey, you're broken. Something is wrong with you. You had this demon. You're not holy enough, or you're not worthy enough. And I just wonder what that leads to with people.
Yes.
So, okay. Now, I'm always really careful about this, about pastors operating in their level of competence. So you are a mental health professional, but what about a pastor or church leaders that aren't mental health professionals? What would be some tips that you could give them if they're dealing with a young person or young adult that's going through depression?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Number one of the principles that we have in this profession is do not operate outside the boundaries of your profession.
Okay.
Which means I am not a doctor. Mm-hmm. I cannot give prescribed medication.
Right.
Not only that, if I do that, I will go to jail probably.
Okay.
Because of malpractice.
Yeah. You
know, I don't have the authority to prescribe. Some of my patients, they come to my office and they say, can you give me medicine? And I say, I cannot do that. For that, you need to go out and see a psychiatrist.
Mm-hmm.
And then I do make a referral.
Okay. So
what I'm saying with this, Glenn, is do not operate outside the boundaries of your profession.
Okay.
Number one. Number two, just because you are not operating under, you know, like a mental health professional, like a psychologist, a therapist, a counselor, that doesn't make you less of a person.
Okay.
You are gifted by God. God has given you gift as a pastor that you are. And if mental health is not one of your strengths, then it's okay to refer.
Mm-hmm.
It's perfectly fine. So please do not operate outside the boundaries of your profession.
Okay. And yeah, there, I think that's... Go ahead.
There are some pastors, and, you know, I'm not saying that we in Mennonite Church USA, at least I hope we don't, that we, when we... someone comes to us with a mental health problem, a clinical depression, severe anxiety or panic attacks. They come to us and they ask for help. And then we say, pray.
Mm.
And they pray, but nothing happens. Because what happens, there is an imbalance in how the brain is firing up. So the depression doesn't leave, the anxiety continues. Not only that, but it worsens. starts to have suicidal ideations because it's losing hope that the depression is not improving. So we come to the pastor again and we say, "Pastor, I'm praying." You know, then they say, "You don't have enough faith." Mm. You know, "You don't have enough faith, and that's why you are not being healed." Think about what does to the parishioner. The right. parishioner is having depression, is feeling hopeless, maybe dealing with suicidal ideations, and now the spiritual leader is telling him, is telling her, "You don't have enough faith, and that's why you are not being healed."
Yeah.
I think that that is, with all due respect to my colleagues, I think that that is a spiritual abuse.
Oh, wow. Right. No, I mean, I don't disagree. I think you've given us some wise things to consider as pastors, as leaders, and if, you know, pastors and leaders may be listening to this right now. One, the second thing that you said is that you are gifted by God. Like, I think that we have to understand that as spiritual leaders, that's what we are. We are spiritual leaders as pastors. Mm-hmm. Now, some of us, like you, Rolando, may have some expertise in another area, and that's great. But I think we need to really change maybe even how we think about the position of pastor, church leader. You know, back in the day, pastors were expected to do everything, marital counseling, financial counseling, mm-hmm. Maybe fix the car, I don't know, at the church, or clean up the church building. But pastors aren't, we really aren't experts in everything. And we need to be okay with that. We have certain gifts, mm-hmm. and we need to live into those gifts. Mm-hmm. So your first recommendation, you said, don't operate outside the boundaries of your profession. Okay. If you're listening to this, I think you should write that down if you're a pastor, because I've seen pastors get themselves in trouble in a number of ways trying to operate outside of that realm as a spiritual leader. You know, I've seen pastors go to jail because they've given bad financial advice. They're trying to tell their parishioners, you know, what to invest in and buy cryptocurrency and buy foreign money and all these other things. I've seen pastors disrupt relationships because they think they're qualified to do marriage counseling. And I'm not even sure where that came from. Where did it say that pastors can do marital counseling? Now, there's a spiritual counseling aspect of it, but unless you're trained and have gotten specific certifications, I think we need to question some of those things that we do as pastors.
I do believe that.
Yeah. And then you said, then the piece about praying, I do think you said it could be akin to spiritual abuse. Sometimes how we utilize that, we tell people to pray, and then if nothing changes, we're saying that's not enough. But would we apply that to other conditions, other medical conditions? If someone needed a coronary bypass, would we say, "Oh, just pray"? Well, some people do. Now, I have known people that have done that, but most of us would say, "No, go see your doctor."
And Glenn, you know, just, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but
yeah, yeah.
We need to pray even for physical conditions.
Yes.
The Lord, yes. Our Lord invites us to pray and to bring our burdens to him in prayer.
Yes.
So it is appropriate to pray, you know, but also we need to understand that God has prepared doctors and psychologists and psychiatrists and counselors and therapists. You know, all of us in the body of Christ serving with the gift that he has given us.
Yes, that's great. Right. So God has given us this big, wonderful set of resources, tools, including prayer.
Exactly.
And we don't want to eliminate any of it. Right. We want to pray when people are going through things, because, you know, and Rolando, I do believe this. I believe that when we pray, that it makes whatever else we're doing that much more effective.
Correct.
Yeah, that it puts us in it's actually been proven for people that prayer actually makes a difference in how efficacious medicine is, how fast they get healed, that this prayer, the Spirit of God, however you want to call it, but as a Christian, I feel like it's the Spirit of God, that it makes whatever we're doing that much more effective. But that doesn't mean that we don't do the other things, right? We still need to eat healthy. We need to come see counselors, or even take you know, whatever medicine may help us get through these illnesses, including mental illness that we may be dealing with.
That is correct. Let me give you an example. My beloved wife, you know, of 37 years, you know, she suffered from severe PTSD. Mm-hmm. You know, for many years, my poor wife went through a severe clinical depression.
Okay.
The poor woman, she couldn't go to sleep, so she never got REM sleep. You know, she was always hypervigilant.
Yeah.
That something was going to happen for 3 consecutive years.
Yeah.
It was not. Sometimes she would leave the doctor's office and wanted to come back immediately. Mm-hmm. To the doctor's office because she didn't feel right. So poor wife, you know, she suffered a lot. It was not until she started to take medication, the right medication, that her levels, chemical levels in her brain, they were balanced.
Right.
And then she was able to sleep. You know, she needed to take medication. Did we pray? We prayed for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
My wife prayed to God because her overwhelming thoughts of harming and harming her family, you know. And then she was praying.
Right.
But nothing changed.
Right.
You know, until she started to take medication.
Yeah.
Now she's well. She's been well for many years. You know, but just to make emphasis, prayer is important.
Yes, it is. And you know, yeah, we must pray. And I think that, you know, when we talk to God and open ourselves up to that, it gives us, you know, access to information. You know, the Spirit leads and guides us. And maybe part of that guidance is, hey, we need to see the right doctor, you know, leads us to the right medicine. Because even if you take medicine, you can take the wrong medicine, you know, for different conditions. And so we know that none of these things by themselves could be effective. And so our faith is still an important part of our healing process, you know, no matter what avenue we take. I think that I know for a fact that our faith is part of that journey. So thank you for sharing that story about your wife. I mean, that's a personal story, but I think it's important too, that we as pastors and as adults are transparent and share our pain with, you know, we start off talking about young people, but share that pain. Often in the church, I feel like we try to hide like those things that are going on. But like you said at the beginning, we need to destigmatize that, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
And, you know, sharing our struggles is one way to destigmatize that. You know, for some reason, our parishioners, they put us in this pedestal.
Right, right.
You know, like we never go through struggles. We're the pastors. We're the spiritual leaders. You know, so that doesn't touch us. That's not true. You know, we need to show that we are vulnerable to our parishioners.
Why do you think it's so hard for us as pastors and leaders to be vulnerable like that?
Misunderstanding of our role as a pastor.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we are not superhuman beings.
We are not superhuman beings.
No.
Maybe we need to repeat that. We are just humans, right?
We're just humans.
We're just human with a specific role, a specific call. But but even if you, as you read the Bible, most of these prominent figures in the Bible are just ordinary people. Sometimes they do extraordinary things, but they are ordinary people who have problems, fears, anxiety, all of these things. I mean, we see it over and over again with the biblical story. So I don't know where the sense of perfection came from. I don't know, Rolando. I don't know where it came from in the church.
Case in point is Elijah, you know, after slaughtering the prophets, you know, and he went fall into a depression.
Yeah.
You know, and God needed to take care of him. While he was going through this funk, you know?
Yeah. That's interesting that you point that out, though, because we don't often talk about that, about people in the Bible really being depressed. And you see it in the stories. They don't necessarily say depression, but like you said, they fell into a funk or a deep sadness. The Bible talks about, you know, some of those things, you know, when, you know, some of the, I think when Jonah went to Nineveh,
right,
and was sitting under the little tree or whatever. He was probably a little depressed, right?
He wanted to die.
Yeah.
Yes. So,
you know, that's interesting. Now that I think about it, we just don't name those things very clearly when we are when we're telling these Bible stories or when we're talking to young people.
That is correct. Yes, I think we need to.
Yeah, we should. We should. Well, thank you so much, Rolando, for what you've shared, and I hope this is a blessing to some people, maybe even a blessing to some pastors that are out there struggling. Again, we started off talking about young people and some of the challenges that they face, but even as adults, you know, old adults, we can suffer for some of these things. And so one of the things that you've encouraged us to do is to destigmatize mental health. Also heard you just want us to encourage us to be transparent when we're talking to young people, take their concerns seriously. If there's something that we can't handle as pastors, that's outside of our scope of expertise, we can refer people to the appropriate place. And I would even recommend pastors that you have a list of places where you can refer people for counseling, mental health, places that maybe that you vetted, that you know, combine the medical with the spiritual. I know when I was a pastor, we had a Christian counseling service that we kind of collaborated with so that we can refer our members to.
I think it's important because I know that in my profession, here in my office, if I don't make the right referrals, I can be legally liable.
Yeah.
For neglect.
Yeah.
You know, for not making the right referral. You know, so I don't know how that works in our profession as pastors. Yeah. You know, but I know that in mental health,
yeah,
if I don't make the right referral, you know, I can be liable for that.
All right. So, pastors, I encourage you to make the right referral. And I know that there are some differences depending on which state you're in and some of your roles. But please check those out. Make sure that you refer people to the right places. But Rolando, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it talking to you, getting to know you just a little bit. And look forward to connecting with you in the future. But as we close, just for the latest news and events from Mennonite Church USA, please subscribe to Piecemeal, our weekly email newsletter at MennoniteUSA.org/piecemeal. Again, that's MennoniteUSA.org/piecemeal. We ask that you prayerfully consider supporting the ongoing work of Mennonite Church USA's ministry at MennoniteChurchUSA.org/give. Thank you so much for joining us today.